Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Who is January Jones? She is not a young, beautiful, talented actress on Mad Men. She is not an older, gorgeous, exotic dancer from the Johnny Carson Show. She is an author, and she wrote Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th Commandment, that reached number one at Amazon.com. She is a reality TV golf personality with World High Stakes Golf televised on HDNet. She is a humorist and winologist expert. She is your featured host today on January Jones Sharing Success Stories. So sit back, relax, and get ready to laugh and listen to Ms. Jones with her eclectic roster of guests as you learn life's lessons. These stories plus sharing equals success. Welcome, and remember, beware, because you are entering the no-whining world of January Jones.
Now let me ask you a question. Have you ever heard about someone who is a psychic lawyer? Yes, you heard me right, psychic lawyer. Would you like to learn more about what it's like growing up a psychic? Have you ever wondered about the difference between a psychic and a medium? Can you imagine having parents who were psychic too? Well, sometimes I used to think my mother definitely was psychic. Tell me, do you know how grief and crime are related to each other? Have you ever heard about a fantastic book called Never Letting Go? Or better yet, would you like to meet someone who has some of the answers that we're looking for today? Now, are you ready to learn how to be a successful psychic and successful lawyer all at one time? If you can answer yes or maybe to any of these questions, then you are in the right place, and I would like to welcome you to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. Today, I will be introducing you to my guest. He is a success coach extraordinaire, and he will provide us with wonderful, informative, and inspirational lessons and some really, really great advice. I am pleased to announce that this show is now live on Talk For Media and syndicated on iHeartRadio Talk and Blog Talk Radio. We are archived 24/7 for your listening pleasure. Also, LinkedIn announced that my profile was one of the top 5% most viewed last year. Now, let me tell you a little bit about my guest. My guest is the psychic lawyer, is a practicing medium who not only communicates with spirits, he is also a successful attorney licensed to practice law in Florida, Washington, D.C., and before the United States Supreme Court. He graduated from Mercer Law School with honors, which included the study of law at Oxford University in England. He also studied mediumship in England at the Arthur Findlay College for the Advancement of Psychic Science. My guest is a published author of the bestseller Never Letting Go, which is the definitive guide to healing grief with the help from the other side. Please welcome our guest today, psychic lawyer Mark Anthony. Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, January. Thank you for having me on the show. I've really been looking forward to this.
Well, you know, I have too, because I'm fascinated with your background. Let's talk about your beginning. What was it like growing up, and how old were you when you realized that you were psychic?
I was probably about 4 years old.
Really?
And yeah, that's when my first memories start coming together. And I used to sit there and talk to my friends, and I would have these spiritual energies come and talk to me. Now, it's not unusual for kids to sit there and have make-believe friends things like that, except for the fact that my parents could see them too, because both of my parents were psychic mediums. And so when it started happening with me, I remember my mom going, oh, boy, here we go. But I also remember my father getting very upset with me one day, and he said, stop that. Don't do that. People who see things that aren't there get taken away. And
oh,
it really frightened me. Uh-huh. And I'll never forget, and I write about this in my book, Never Letting Go. I'll never forget my mother saying, you know, honey, she said, you know, he's like us.
Uh-huh.
And my dad could see I was really scared, and he sat me down. I'm like, I'm sorry, Daddy. You know, I didn't know what I was doing wrong, you know. And he sat me down, and he says, Mark, he said, there's nothing wrong with you. It's just that people don't understand. So just don't talk about it outside of the house because people will think you're crazy.
And
Well, there was a lot to that January, because when I got older, I finally asked Dad, I said, why were you so upset about that?
Mm-hmm.
And in the early 1950s, his sister, who was a medium, she was involuntarily committed to a mental institution and subjected to electroshock therapy against her will, because she could see spirits and she could foretell the future. And the problem is that her husband was very, very religious. He was not spiritual. He was religious, and he thought that what she was doing was evil and negative. And so, and back then, when mental institutions administered electroshock, it was at an extremely high voltage. And it's not like today when they do it to people that are clinically depressed and such to kind of to stimulate parts of their brain.
Mm-hmm.
And that really, really upset my father. And so he said, you know, Mark, people don't understand, and they get taken away in straitjackets, which she was. So so there was always this undercurrent of keep it in the house, keep it quiet.
Yeah. It was a secret, and it was something that you never talked about with strangers. Now, when you say both your parents were psychics, how did they meet, and were they practicing psychics, or did they keep their psychic, were they keeping their secret too?
It's really a fascinating tale, and actually in my upcoming book, I write quite a bit about this, but to give you the Cliff Notes version and a little bit for the listeners, my dad came from a very conservative, WASPy-type family, and there were a number of mediums and psychics in the family, but they kept it very clandestine. And when he was about, I don't know, about 8 or 9 years old, he started hearing voices. And it always happened when he went down into, they lived in Pennsylvania, and he would go down into the cellar to stoke the furnace, and he'd hear this voice come talk to him. Well, even as a little kid back then, he realized that hearing voices is not a good thing, and people are going to think you're nuts.
Right.
Right. But, and so he kind of kept the clamp on it. And then when he was about 15 or 16 years old, he was working, and he came home early one day. It was on a Thursday. And apparently his mother, my grandmother, and his sister Marjorie, the one that later was committed, they used to, quote-unquote, have the girls over for bridge and tea on Thursday afternoons while the men were at work. And, and they had this big drawing room, and he was listening through the door, and he heard, now there's a man coming through, and blah, blah, blah. And so he's like, oh, my God, you know. And so when they came out, he goes, what's going on in there? And they said, and they were essentially conducting readings for people. And it was all very clandestine. And so he started explaining about his ability, and his mother's like, oh, well, there's another one in the family. And then when he was in World War II, he noticed something very startling, that he would see these auras around certain men on his ship before they went into battle, and it was this dark thing. And basically, he could tell when people were going to die, and he still can.
Wow.
You know, my dad, he's going to be 88, and he has this ability, which he finds very upsetting. So in his family, it was very prevalent, but it was kept quiet. On the flip side of the family, my mom's side, they were Italians, and like my mom's, you know, and to them, they didn't keep it quiet. You know, they talk about it, and they were like, but they looked at it as a gift from God. And my great grandmother on my mother's side, Giovanna, she was like the mega psychic, mega medium, and she was a midwife, and people used to flock to her in the Italian community of Newark, New Jersey, and in Brooklyn, because she was quote unquote the woman who knew things. Then my mother emerged with incredibly significant psychic and mediumistic abilities, and I tell a number of very, very fascinating stories. And it's funny because when I originally wrote Never Letting Go, the book was significantly longer, and my publisher said, well, you're writing too much about your family, so they made me take some of it out, and they said, you know, maybe you can use that in a subsequent book. The funny thing, January, I get letters and emails constantly. Mm-hmm. People say, we want to know more about your family because there's so many interesting characters that have these abilities. Yeah. And then,
well, now let me ask you, did your parents, did they earn a living from being psychic, or was this just kind of something they did on the side?
No, they didn't do it professionally at all. In fact, my father was an engineer, and he's one of the guys that helped figure out how to get Apollo 13 back.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. And my mother was a commercial artist, and then, you know, when she had the kids, she was focused on being a mom. But mom, it was funny because she would say things and she would do things. And, you know, I didn't think it was weird. You know, I mean, I'd come home from school and I'd be like, hey, Mom, do we have any peanut butter? And she says, yes, honey, it's over there. She goes, oh, by the way, I saw a spirit today. And I'm like, that's cool. And I'd be eating my peanut butter sandwich. And she's talking about, yeah, I saw this spirit and that, you know. And so then as I started getting older, I realized, you know, not everybody's mom is like this.
Now, let me ask you, Mark, were you an only child, or did you have any siblings who were psychic too?
I have two older siblings, and they both exhibit psychic abilities. Now, I know in the intro you brought up a very good point. What's the difference between a psychic and a medium?
Right.
Psychics tune into, if you will, or align their energy with the frequency or vibration of a person, place, or thing. So that's why, like, if someone's doing a psychic reading on you, they're tuning into your energy, and they can divine past, present, future events, health conditions, things like that.
Right.
What a medium does is we tune into the energy of a third party, which is a spirit. Now, both of my siblings exhibit they get premonitions, and they're very good reading people right away and in situations. My brother picks up on the presence of spirits, but he doesn't really like working with that. Whereas I kind of got the whole package. I'm the medium. And the interesting thing is it appears to be a genetic predisposition because it runs in both sides of the family. And, and I always ask my parents, well, how did you meet?
Yeah.
And they met at a USO dance at the end of World War II.
Okay.
They said they were dancing, looked in each other's eyes from across the room, and knew that was it. It's so Americana. I mean, and they courted for a couple years, and then my dad had to ask permission of my Italian grandfather for his daughter's hand in marriage. And it's a funny story. And my grandfather says, so, what the religion are you? And my father goes, well, we're Baptist. He goes, Baptist?
Oh, my gosh.
If you want to marry my daughter, you must have become a Catholic. And my dad's like, what? And so he went through the whole which back then was major process of becoming a Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they had their honeymoon at Niagara Falls. I mean, it's so Americana. And
now, did your dad become a practicing Catholic, or did he do it just in order to marry your mom?
Both. He did it because he loved her more than anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, we went to Catholic church. I went to Catholic school. In fact, I had considered very heavily becoming a priest. Well, from a young age, with the whole spiritual aspect, I was very drawn to the spiritual. And I decided, though, when I started getting into my teens, I thought, you know, I don't want to do that. And number two, I won't tell you why, but
I can guess, Mark. You know what, Mark? We're going to take a break and hear from some of our sponsors. Like your listeners and readers, I adore hearing about your family. It's quite a unique story you are sharing with us, and I'm so happy to have you here. We'll be right back with Mark Anthony, author of Never Letting Go.
Has been married and divorced four times and lived to tell the tale with honesty, humor, and a heartfelt message. Check out Pam's first book, Ring Exchange, Adventures of a Multiple Marrier, where she shares her hard-won lessons about behavior, emotions, relationships, and her marriage partner choices. Learn more about Pam's road less traveled and how she anticipates every day with joy and a sense of gratitude. Visit Pam's website at www.ring-exchange.com. Her book is available on Amazon.com, too. Everyone deserves a happy life. Life is supposed to be fun. Your life is supposed to feel good, and you're meant to feel happiness in your life and to satisfy your dreams. And you can. Because the only reason anyone wants anything or does anything is that they think they will feel better in the having of it or the doing of it. They think they will feel better in the experiencing of it. Coming soon, a website where you can learn more on how you can have the life you deserve at afeelgoodworld.com.
Welcome back, and I want to share with our listeners that both Pam Evans and Dale Bruner will be guests on the show next week, and I'm looking forward to having wonderful interviews with them. Today we're visiting with Mark Anthony, the author of a best-selling book, Never Letting Go, and he is sharing with us his psychic childhood and the romance that his parents had. Now, you became a psychic lawyer. Well, now, first let's back up and... who was the first spirit that you saw? Was it someone you knew from a past life, or how did it work out? How did that play out for you?
You know, when I was really young, it would be hard for me to describe because I would see a lot of spirits.
Uh-huh.
But I noticed throughout my childhood, I would be able, if I walked into a house, I'd say, somebody died here.
Oh,
and people would look at me and say, really?
Okay.
And
yeah.
I would just sort of pick up on that.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, it got very intense. And I remember my mother always talking to me, saying, you know, you're very psychic and you've got the family gift.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to a class, you know, it was like in my 20s. And I thought, well, this will be fun. And I sit down and I'm doing all this. And the guy that was teaching the class said to me, he goes, how long have you been doing this? I go, well, I don't know. I've just been in your class. He goes, I've never seen anyone like you. He said, you're functioning at a level of someone who's been doing this for like 30 years. And I'm like, really? And then what I realized was when I walk up to people and I would pick up on spirits around them, there's sensations and there's things that you see. And when I got into a clinical setting where we were actually studying it, I'd say, oh, so that's what that is.
Oh,
and
okay.
It's
okay,
like I knew I could pick up on spirits, but when I started refining it, it's like, oh, and then I thought, well, doesn't everybody do this? And they're like, no. And but you know, January, you see, I live with me.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know any different. And it wasn't looked at as a weird thing in my family. So I'm very fortunate that way, because I know a lot of psychics and mediums who were treated like they were insane,
or
they were devil worshippers or whatever, because they would be, you know, they'd be different. And to the listeners out there, there's nothing wrong with being different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's nice to fit in and be with the crowd, but a lot of you that have children that may be exceptional in many different ways,
mm-hmm.
tell them it's okay. It's okay to be different. You know, it's okay to fit in, but when you are different, you should embrace that and work with it, as opposed mm-hmm. to suppressing it and feeling that it's somehow negative.
Right. You know, how wonderful that you chose the family that you chose to be born into. Since you had these abilities, you were in the perfect family. You know, I've had some fabulous experience with psychics, and I'm very open to it. I hope that a lot of people, that this interview will open a lot of people's eyes and let them consider this psychic mediumship gift that you have received. Now let's talk about what it's like being a psychic lawyer. Now, that's a whole different story, isn't it?
It is. It is funny because like people will say things on Facebook, well, what does a psychic lawyer do? And
yeah.
It's like, well, you know, I was born a psychic. Okay,
mm-hmm.
That's part of my genetic makeup. That's who I am. I went to law school. And what I found was when I got out of law school, my first job was as a prosecutor.
Uh-huh.
And part of prosecution, it's not always being in court, you know, fighting to save the world from criminals and all that. It's handling first appearances. And what that means is when in Florida, where I live, when somebody gets arrested, and it's pretty much the same in all the states,
mm-hmm.
someone gets arrested, they have to go before a judge unless they get bonded out right away. And there would usually be two prosecutors at what we call the first appearance. You have a stack of police reports. Well,
mm-hmm.
they bring in all the suspects, and, you know, they're all handcuffed and chained up. They bring them in, and I'd look at one and go, oh, that one's a sex offender. Oh, that one looks like retail theft. Oh, that one looks like, you know. And I remember one of my trial partners, you know, that's sitting there going, how do you know that? So they used to play this game with me where they would turn the arrest reports upside down. And when
uh-huh.
someone comes, they go, now, what's he charged with or what's she charged with? And about 90% plus of the time, I was right. And they're like, oh, it's just how they look. And you look at all of them, it's like, well, how can you tell a retail theft from, you know, a fraud, you know, and that type of thing? And I started also noticing on jury selection that I would pick up on things. And something that I write about in Never Letting Go is there was this was when I was a defense attorney. I was representing this guy who was charged with battery, which is, you know, he got in a barroom brawl. Basically, and forgive me for kind of, you know, being a little bit loose here, but it was Redneck A got in a fight with Redneck B at a bar here in Central Florida. All right? It's not like it's a unique thing, okay? But it's still a crime of violence. It's still a crime of violence. And so at the beginning of the trial, before we start taking evidence, that's jury selection. And jury selection is extremely important. In fact, all the trial attorneys will tell you that, you know, most of the time the trial's won or lost on the composition of the jury. And
mm-hmm.
we've certainly seen this because I do a lot of legal analysis. We saw that in like O.J. Simpson and Michael Jackson and Casey Anthony and George Zimmerman and all that.
Right.
So I kept getting drawn to this one prospective juror because first mm-hmm. the prosecution, then the defense, we get to ask questions in jury selection to ensure that we're selecting the most fair and impartial jury as possible. And
right.
so you have to find out if there's any biases or prejudices. And this one woman, I kept feeling a female presence around her, and I kept feeling this tightening sensation in my throat,
mm-hmm.
okay, because I pick up on a lot of physical sensations from spirits. So I stood up and I said, and I looked at her and I said, let me ask you a question.
Uh-huh.
Have you or has anyone in your family ever been the victim of a violent crime?
Wow.
And she starts to shake and tremble, and the
mm-hmm.
tears start to stream from her eyes. And she looks at me and she said, last year my sister was in a foreign country when an escaped mental patient strangled her and then dismembered her body and threw her in a garbage like she was trash, and she starts crying. And then I realize I'm picking up on a female spirit. I'm feeling a
uh-huh.
choking sensation in my throat. It was her sister,
yeah, sister.
Who was
okay.
communicating with me. And my client's looking at everyone in the courtroom is looking at me like, oh, my God, do something. And I remember my client looked at me, and he didn't say it, but I could see with his mouth. He's like, dude, he's like, well, WTF are you doing? You know,
yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If you,
wow.
And so literally I had a foot in both worlds, and I realized I have to represent this guy to the best of my ability, yet the spirit
mm-hmm.
is making an effort to come across from the other side.
Yeah,
And if you want to find out what happens, you're going to have to read Never Letting Go.
I love it. And I'm certainly looking forward to reading it. This is a fascinating story that you're sharing with our listeners. I'm also, now, you went to study at the Arthur Findlay Institute in England. Briefly, before our break, could you share with us what that was like?
It's like being on the set of Harry Potter, but for psychics.
I love it.
It was wonderful. Arthur Findlay was an aristocrat. It was kind of like Downton Abbey for psychics, you know, because
okay.
it's a castle looking type of building from the golden age of the British Empire. And
uh-huh.
Arthur Findlay was a psychic medium who left his fortune, in addition to being a British aristocrat, to found a school to study psychic phenomenon and spirit communication as a science, and to take the woo-hoo and the fear and the religious, you know, paranoia out of it and study it in the forms of vibration and energy and the reality of what it is, as opposed to, you know, get rid of all the superstitious nonsense that, that a lot of people attribute to it.
Well, you know, we're going to take a break and hear from our sponsors. And when we come back with Mark Anthony, I want to hear more about this Arthur Findlay Institute in England. Also want to know how long you were there and what it took to get admitted to that institute. We'll be right back with Mark Anthony.
Nicholas Hazel is a senior member of the Association of Applied and Therapeutic Humor and author of Laughter, the Drug of Choice. Scientific research is discovering that our bodies only hurt when we don't laugh. For anyone interested in a laugh-out-loud collection of medical terms and poetical music, often at the expense of health professionals' love and life, Laughter, the Drug of Choice, is just what the doctor ordered. Do you want to learn how to live into your dreams? One Door Closes, Overcoming Adversity by Following Your Dreams. The new book by Tom Ingracia and Jared Kredemski captures the thought-provoking stories of 16 people from all walks of life who have triumphed over adversity to achieve their goals. Plus, you'll get 10 self-assessment tools to design your own blueprint for success. Unlock your true potential. Fulfill your dreams. Be inspired. One Door Closes is available from Amazon.com.
I highly recommend both Nick's book and Tom's book. They're fantastic books, and if you are looking for a gift to give anyone in your family or friends, especially for Valentine's Day, I recommend both, and these books are available at Amazon.com. We're back with our fantastic guest, Mark Anthony, the author of Never Letting Go. Mark, let's talk a little bit more about how did you get to the Arthur Findlay Institute? How were you accepted, and how long did you study there?
Arthur Findlay is what happens is they have programs that are about anywhere from 7 to 10 days long. I understand they're also doing like 3-4 day seminars. So you can take a number of courses, but they only recommend that you do like a 10-day block because it's so draining. I've studied with them numerous times. And I had to be recommended because I was in the advanced mediumship program. Because what was happening, January, is I started wanting to – I knew that I was a medium. I knew that I had the ability, but I wanted to know how to make the most of it. You know, and people say, well, you know, you should just be able to do it. Well, I'm sure that Michael Phelps needed swimming lessons, even though he was a great swimmer.
Sure.
And I'm sure Eric Clapton took guitar lessons, even though, you know, so you're born with proclivities and abilities, but you need to refine them. And one of the funny stories is I was the only American in the program. And my professor, one of them, he comes prancing on in, and he used to be a jockey, and he's a short, you know, he's short in stature, but huge in character. And he says, all right, there'll be none of this airy-fairy granola nonsense, yeah. And he looks over at me and he goes, oh, and you American. He's like looking right at me. He goes, when all else fails, do whip up a Native American spirit, why don't you? Hiawatha, perhaps, or should it be Pocahontas? He goes, well, there'll be none of that rubbish, yeah. And I didn't know whether to be mortified or to laugh because it was funny. But his point was, and I see this a lot in the States, people utilizing really sloppy mediumship. Oh, there's a Native American around you and blah, blah, blah. And the thing is, you know, well, how come there's never an ancient Etruscan around somebody? What, they don't come back, only Native Americans? You know what I mean? And I'm not trying to be facetious, but I see this when all else fails, whip out a Cherokee, okay? Well, you know, why not a Sioux Indian? You know what I mean? And so people do this, and the whole point of evidential mediumship is when you connect with a spirit is to bring forth the information that they're transmitting to you, which can be objectively verified and identified by the person that is receiving the reading.
Okay.
So, you know, when I see people going, oh, I channel Benjamin
yeah.
Franklin. Well, that's nice. but how can you verify the
yeah.
information that's coming through? So
yeah.
when people go to a reading with mm-hmm. a medium, you've
sure.
got to make sure that you, you know something about the people around you who have died. That doesn't mean you tell the medium. Let
right.
the medium say, I'm getting this. Do you recognize this person? Does this make sense to you? And then you verify it as opposed to providing information to them. So that's how you can tell the difference between a legitimate medium like myself and the people that are, you know, the unscrupulous
yeah.
people who dare to scam people
sure.
on this.
And there certainly are ones out there, and they seem to connect with bereaved people who are very vulnerable and so eager to hear something from the other side. Before we go on, Mark, could you share your website information and share with my listeners where they can get your book, Never Letting Go?
My website, very easy. It's the same as the title of my book, neverlettinggo.com.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So if you want to find out about my book, Never Letting Go, go to neverlettinggo.com. And the thing is, Never Letting Go is on sale at all Barnes & Nobles
mm-hmm.
and at all fine bookstores. It is on sale in every country that speaks English.
Okay.
It's also been translated into Slovak. It was funny because I received a copy of my book in Slovak, and it's funny because, I mean, I don't speak Slovak, but I was looking through and I could see, like, you know, my name and other people's
mm-hmm.
names in there in the language. And I understand that on Facebook there is a grief support group in the Slovak Republic
okay.
which endorses my book as recommended reading to help parents and other people who have lost loved ones cope with grief. And so that's a big part of what I try to do on Facebook. I have a grief support group called the Never Letting Go group.
Mm-hmm.
I've also got my Facebook page, which, you know, people, you know, feel free to like my page. If you go to my website, neverlettinggo.com, you can like my Facebook page there.
Okay.
Because I try to provide a forum for people who are grieving to express
mm-hmm.
their feelings. And you know, grief is a road nobody wants to take, but it's one we're shoved down
yes.
at some point in our life. And you shouldn't have to go through it alone. And the sad thing is there's many people that don't have anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's nice about Facebook and about these grief support groups online is you may not have neighbors and friends that will come to you, but you can reach out to other people in these grief support groups.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
that's what I try to conduct is a safe place for people to express their feelings.
Oh, that's so important for it to be safe. You know, talking about your book being translated in another language, my book was translated in Korean and Chinese, and when they sent me copies, it was like, oh my gosh, I wonder how they translated it or what they said. It's quite an experience. What makes your book different from other books written by psychics?
A lot of things. First, it is a guide on the journey through grief.
Uh-huh.
Secondly, it's inspirational in that it uses evidential mediumship
mm-hmm.
to provide evidence of an afterlife.
Okay.
It is a teaching tool which helps people recognize that their loved ones in spirit are around and the signs to look for. And then it's healing in that it produces messages of love and hope from the other side. So
mm-hmm.
what I do is the fascinating thing about my dual careers as an attorney and as a psychic medium is
mm-hmm.
I sort of bridge the gap between the two. I mean,
yeah.
you know, when you meet me, it's I look like your lawyer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like I'm conservative in my demeanor. I don't come up wearing a turban and tie-dye and throwing granola at you and all that. And
right.
and not that I have a problem with those people because I know a lot of people that kind of are like that. But I'm conservative in my demeanor, and everything I do is based on evidence. You know, I don't transmit messages from, you know, Queen Victoria or, whoever the spirits of blah, blah, blah are coming through. I mean, I try to keep it factual and evidence. Now,
right.
The funny thing is,
yeah, that's
I was doing a reading for this woman once, and I was, her father came through, and I described him like looking very much like Clark Gable, the movie star. And
uh-huh.
the woman was great because she reminded me. Remember on Gilligan's Island, Lovey. Remember Lovey?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, Thurston's wife. She kind of reminded me of Lovey. You know, she was very elegant and very charming. And she was like, "Oh, father, so looked like Clark Gable. He was so dashing and debonair and all this,
uh-huh.
you know." And I said, "Well, there's a man standing next to him."
Mm-hmm.
I said, "This is going to sound really weird, but he looks like Ronald Reagan." And
uh-huh.
she goes, "Well, what's weird about that?" I go, "Well, you know, President Reagan." She goes, "Well, they were good friends." And I'm like, "What?" So the thing is, I've done a lot of readings for celebrities,
mm-hmm.
and it's a real trip. I did a reading for somebody, I'm not at liberty to say who it was, but her
mm-hmm.
family is part of like a Hollywood dynasty. And in this one reading, I said, "There's someone coming through that," I go, "Oh, my God." I said, "This guy looks like Groucho Marx."
And, it was.
And it was. And it, what it was is the family member that I was connecting with was like two generations back,
uh-huh.
and one of his good buddies was Groucho Marx. And I was like so like totally freaking out, like, "Oh,
yeah.
my God, Groucho Marx," you know. So it's very interesting when things like that happen. But it's not about connecting with celebrities and famous people. It's about helping people. And the thing is, it doesn't matter if the spirit who comes through was a Yorkshire Terrier that
mm-hmm.
you loved immensely or a family member. The point of spirit contact is to prove the everlasting nature of life. And my five-point message, January, and I talk
mm-hmm.
about this in my book, Never Letting Go, and this is, you know, what I believe to be my mission on life, is to help
mm-hmm.
people understand that God exists,
mm-hmm.
heaven exists,
mm-hmm.
you can call it the other side, nirvana, whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
that our soul is an immortal living spirit, that we can communicate with these souls, and that when it is our appointed time to pass, we will cross into the light and be reunited with those that we love. And that is the whole point, I believe, of my work as a medium and what mediumship should be about.
Well, that is such a comforting and powerful message. And as my listeners have known this past few weeks, we've been doing shows on near-death experiences. We've been doing shows about people who have been embraced by the white light. And this show will fit in just perfectly because your message is so powerful and so comforting. We're going to take a break. And when we come back with Mark Anthony, we'll ask him a few more questions about the other side. We'll be right back.
Time around can be better. Second timers try harder. Looking to have a rewarding second marriage? Any marriage. Read Successful Second Marriages by Patricia Bubash. She interviews a variety of couples that have succeeded in their second attempt. Each story reflects that the second marriages can be tough going, yet be the best of the best. Learn from these couples who share their intimate stories, how they struggled with difficulty and have thrived. Stories such as, "Our kids drove us apart. We separated 5 times in 4 years. 4 months into our marriage, my 85-year-old father-in-law came to live with us. 1 year into our marriage, I was diagnosed legally blind. Death of my eldest child brought grief, depression into our new marriage." Successful Second Marriages is encouraging, hopeful, inspiring. Available on Amazon.com in book form and ebook. Read Pat's musings at www.successfulsecondmarriages.com.
Have you ever met someone who was unforgettable? Someone who has touched your heart and soul? People who have faced difficult problems? People who have fearlessly shared their stories, their struggles, and their successes? People who have priceless personalities? In my new book, Priceless Personality, Success Stories Shared by January Jones, I am honored to be able to share with you people dealing with problems such as incest, molestation, child abuse, drug abuse, polygamy, unemployment, scandal, starting over, self-esteem, and workplace issues. My guests have all been exciting, eclectic, and energizing. They will amaze, amuse, and even astonish you. You will adore getting to meet them at Amazon.com. My book is now available, 2-for-1, paperback and Kindle editions.
Welcome back with another most priceless personality that we are sharing with you today on the show. Mark Anthony, the author of Never Letting Go, has been sharing with us his experience as a psychic medium and as a lawyer, all three combined. Now, Mark, do the police ever consult you for leads on crimes?
Yes. I've worked on a couple cold cases. I've also done legal analysis as a legal expert on some cold cases. And one of the most unusual situations, I was consulted by somebody in military intelligence, and I have to keep the details vague here for various reasons.
Sure.
Concerning the only pilot who was shot down in Gulf War I.
Mm-hmm.
And during the session, and there was somebody there that had had a personal connection with him, this gentleman came through, and I started describing him, and he said that he had a wife, and I believe, you know, it was like two or three children, I forget exactly. And from the description I gave, it fit him exactly. And he explained that he was shot down, he was taken prisoner, brutalized, and then his body had been burned.
Mm-hmm.
Well, about a year later, there was an article that came up in the news that they finally located the fighter jet that was shot down.
Wow.
And I got a note, a handwritten note from the officer that had contacted me. And all it said was, everything you said coincides with our findings.
Okay.
And I'm like, well, what? You know, I wanted to know more, but I also know better. One thing I've learned as a lawyer is sometimes you should never miss an opportunity to keep your mouth shut.
Okay. Well, I think more lawyers probably need to hear that advice.
Yeah, they do. It can at times be very trying because people don't always understand what I do, and certainly I've been the brunt of a lot of jokes. And you know, not that I like to pick on anybody or do a tit for tat, but there's this one judge, and he used to use his chambers, or probably still does.
Uh-huh.
To hold prayer meetings, fundamentalist Christian prayer meetings, on Thursday afternoons in his courtroom. Now, I have no problem with Christianity or fundamentalists or Hindus or Muslims or anybody.
Uh-huh.
However, separation of church and state, he's using a government facility to conduct religious meetings, and that violates the First Amendment, and this is a judge. So anyway, he had called a meeting in his chambers, and I had to be there, and there was a lot of people there, and it was an organizational thing, and I walk in, and he makes this joke, and he says, oh, I guess we can get rid of the probate division since he can talk to dead people, and like everyone's laughing at me.
Oh, dear.
And
I
looked at him, and I said,
wow.
I like your Christ, but I don't like you Christians because you act so unlike your Christ.
Oh,
he goes, how dare you say that? I go, I didn't. Mahatma Gandhi said that to a group of British generals.
Uh-huh. Fantastic.
And he said, okay, point well taken.
Very good. Because your message is a message of healing. It's a spiritual message, and it's not a denominational message. And so many people out there miss that. When you have you ever communicated with spirits of people who have been murdered or spirits who have unfinished business? Has that ever happened?
Extensively.
I bet.
In fact, in Never Letting Go, to me, one of the most gripping readings that I write about. And even to this day, January, I mean, you know, between writing the book and editing it, you know, because the secret to writing, as Mario Puzo, who wrote The Godfather, said, the secret to good writing is rewriting. So
oh,
you
yeah.
write it, and you go back, and you got to tweak it and fix this. And, you know, you got to, of course, make sure it's grammatically and it flows, and you know, you can't make assumptions and that sort of thing. But I write about a boy named Juni Rios Martinez, and he was 11 years old when he was kidnapped, raped, and murdered by a serial killer.
Wow.
And I did a reading for his mother, and Juni came through with his grandmother, and then another spirit comes through, and it was the killer. And the thing is, I didn't realize that the killer had been put to death, even though this case had occurred in Florida, because I travel a lot, and I was actually out of the state when the killer's name was Mark Dean Schwab, had been executed. And, you know, it's better if the listeners read the passage in the book, but it was incredibly intense. And it also focused on the different levels of the other side. In other words, Juni was in what I call the heaven dimension, in this lighter, brighter, airy, when I say airy, what I mean is a lighter vibration, like connecting with Juni just felt incredible and peaceful and fantastic. And then when Schwab's spirit came through, I felt disgusted. And I felt a deep, heavy vibration. And the thing is, when Schwab came through, it was very clear, the information he was transmitting, that he was insane. I mean, who else could do that to a child?
Yeah.
But he said, I'm no longer insane. And even Juni said, over here, he's not evil. And what it was, but now his consciousness, which is aware of what he did while here in the material world, has to